I want you to picture a scene.
Yeah.
It feels, I don't know, almost like the opening sequence of a political thriller.
Oh, like something out of a movie or a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. But this is actually historical fact. It is March 1995. We are in Washington, D.C., inside the White House, and it is well past midnight.
Right, the witching hour in the corridors of power.
Exactly. And you are standing in the Lincoln bedroom. The President of the United States, Bill Clinton, is there. He's talking to a man named Richard Lamm, who's the former governor of Colorado.
Just casually hanging out in the Lincoln bedroom past midnight.
Right. It's late. They're tired, maybe loosened up a bit. But Clinton turns to him and asks this completely specific, almost random question. He asks, "Dick, what do you know about the Chilean social security system?"
It is it's such a wonderfully specific question for a sitting president to be asking in the middle of the night. It sounds like trivia.
It really does.
But that question is actually the thread that unravels the entire story we are covering today.
All right, so welcome to the deep dive. Today we are unpacking a concept that the sources audaciously title the mother of all reforms.
That is a big title.
It is. We are working off a stack of primary sources, articles, and historical notes. And our mission today is to look at the privatization of pension systems, specifically this capitalization model that was pioneered in Chile back in 1980.
And the central figure in all these documents, the man who essentially put that midnight question into Bill Clinton's head, is the architect of that system, an economist named José Piñera.
Right.
We're going to trace how this economic model didn't just, stay in South America. It traveled. It captivated world leaders from Bill Clinton all the way to Vladimir Putin.
It's basically a story about how the global economy almost changed completely, and in some places actually did. But I think before we get to the geopolitics and the high-speed motorcades in Moscow, we have to look at the stakes.
Yeah, the baseline problem.
Because the sources describe this not just as a policy debate, but as a literal collision course.
Right. If you strip away the economic jargon, the core conflict here is between two very different ways of handling the future. On one side, you have the 19th century pay-as-you-go model,
Which is what most of the Western world still uses.
including the US, exactly. And on the other side, you have the 21st century reality of aging populations.
And when those two things collide, the math just breaks.
It breaks hard. One source actually calls it the pension Titanic.
Wow, pension Titanic, that paints a picture. So to understand the solution, or at least the proposed solution from the texts, we have to understand the architect. Who exactly is Jose Piñera?
He's a really fascinating character in these notes. He's a Chilean economist, obviously, but his intellectual DNA seems very American.
That's a great way to put it, because looking at his background, he's Harvard educated. He holds both a master's and a PhD from there.
Right.
And the sources highlight that while he was in Cambridge, he didn't just study supply and demand curves. He became obsessed with the American founding fathers.
Which is a bit of a twist, right? Usually the narrative we hear is about Americans trying to export their values to other places. This is the exact reverse.
Exactly. He was reading the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and specifically Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America.
Oh, right. Tocqueville went to America in the 1800s to take the secrets of democracy back to France.
And Piñera wanted to do the exact same thing, but southward.
Precisely. He wanted to take the principles of liberty, limited government, and property rights and export them to Chile. He viewed the traditional welfare state not as a safety net, but the sources say he called it a hammock.
A hammock.
Yeah, something that diluted self-reliance and individual dignity.
So let's fast forward to 1980. Piñera is the Secretary of Labor and Social Security in Chile. He has the actual power to implement this vision, so he launches the capitalization system.
Right.
Now, for the listener who might just, check their retirement account once a year and forget about it, we really need to break down the mechanics here. How is this different from the Social Security we know in the U.S.?
The difference is fundamental. It's the difference between a tax and a savings account. In a traditional pay-as-you-go system, which, by the way, was invented by Otto Bismarck in Germany way back in 1881.
Wait, 1881.
Yeah, over 100 years ago. Under that model, current workers pay taxes.
And that money goes where?
It goes out the door immediately. It is handed over directly to current retirees.
Okay.
It's a direct transfer, money in, money out. There is no lockbox where your money sits and grows.
So when I pay my Social Security tax, I'm not actually saving for myself, I'm paying for my parents.
Precisely. You are paying the previous generation, and you're just hoping that the next generation will be numerous enough and wealthy enough to pay for you.
Okay, so Kinyera's system changed that game entirely. Instead of a tax, workers deposit contributions into their own private retirement accounts.
Yes.
And the sources mention passbooks. I love that detail. It feels very tactile, especially for 1980.
Oh, it was crucial for the psychology of the reform. Every worker was given a literal passbook, like an old school bank book. It showed exactly how much capital they had personally accumulated.
So it transformed the worker from a taxpayer into an asset owner.
Exactly. And that shift in identity seems to be the core of Piñera's philosophy. It's kind of like behavioral economics before that was really a buzzword.
Right, because if you see a number next to your name and it's growing, you feel entirely differently about the economy than if you just see a blank tax deduction on your paid stub.
You feel like a stakeholder.
Yeah.
And the historian Niall Ferguson, in his book The Ascent of Money, which is included in our reading list, he makes a massive claim about this specific mechanism.
I recall that. He places Chile right at the center of modern economic history.
He really does. Ferguson calls this the most profound challenge to the welfare state in a generation. He points out that the global backlash against the big government welfare state didn't actually start with Margaret Thatcher in the UK or Ronald Reagan in the US.
It started in Chile.
With this specific reform, yes.
That's a pretty bold historical correction. But let's look at the why. Why was Piñera so dead set against the Bismarck model? I mean, Social Security is often called the third rail of American politics. You touch it, you die. People generally like the idea of a guaranteed safety net. Why blow it up?
Well, the critique in the source material is stark. Piñera and his supporters do not mince words here. They literally refer to the pay-as-you-go model as a Ponzi scheme.
Which is a heavily loaded term. A Ponzi scheme implies fraud. It implies a con artist.
But in their view, the mathematical mechanics are identical. Think about how a Ponzi scheme works. It relies entirely on an ever-expanding base of new investors to pay off the returns of the early investors.
Right. As long as you have way more people joining than leaving, the math works out fine.
Exactly. And in 1881, when Bismarck designed the system, the population pyramid was actually shaped like a pyramid. Lots of young workers at the bottom, very few elderly people at the top.
And let's be honest, people didn't live that long back then. Mm-hmm. You retired at 65 and you died at 67. The system didn't have to support you for 30 years.
If you were lucky, yeah. But look at the world today. The sources call it the demographic winter. In high-income countries, fertility is dropping through the floor, and life expectancy is rising.
Right, so that pyramid has turned into a cylinder. Or in some places like Japan or parts of Europe, it's an inverted pyramid.
So you have fewer young people trying to support more and more old people. It's a crushing weight on the workforce.
And the debt implied by that is astronomical. The notes highlight some terrifying numbers for Europe. The implicit pension debt, meaning the promise of future payments that governments have made but haven't actually funded, is 360% of GDP in France.
Yeah, that number is staggering.
And in Germany, it's 330%. I mean, 360% of GDP. That sounds like a number that simply cannot be paid. That's not a debt. That's a fantasy.
Not without consequence, definitely. There's a quote here from a Newsweek article that predicts a nightmare scenario for Germany by 2050.
Oh, I remember this quote.
It suggests that to keep the system afloat, every single retiree would need to be assigned a labor slave.
A labor slave. That is an incredibly harsh image.
Now, that's the term they use to describe the mathematical reality. It depicts a young worker who has to hand over half their salary every single month just to sustain one pensioner. The sources call it intergenerational theft.
That puts the conflict we mentioned earlier into very sharp relief. It isn't just a political left versus right issue. It's young versus old. So Piñera's solution, this capitalization model, is about breaking that chain of dependency.
Yes. It's inspired heavily by Milton Friedman. The idea is to rely on the two most powerful forces in finance: compound interest and time. In the Chilean system, the money you put in is invested in the market. It buys stocks, bonds, real assets.
And this brings up the magic number from the Chile data. This was the statistic that actually made me stop and reread the page.
The 72% stat?
Yes. Explain that one.
In the Chilean system, 72% of the money a worker ends up with at retirement comes from profit, from compound interest. Only 28% is the money they actually took out of their own paycheck.
That is the literal difference between working for your money and making your money work for you. In the Bismarck system, there is no interest. It's just a flat transfer.
Correct. And the sources claim this had a profound social effect. It turned workers into, quote, small capitalists. It drastically reduced poverty and helped Chile become the highest per capita income country in South America at the time.
And the return rate was wild, right?
Over a 29-year period, the average return was 10% above inflation.
Which is beating the S&P 500 in many eras. So the system works in the lab, so to speak. It's generating wealth in Chile. And I think this brings us back to that midnight meeting in the Lincoln bedroom.
Right, circling back to Clinton.
Because Bill Clinton wasn't just making polite conversation with Governor Lamb, was he?
No, he wasn't. And this is where the story gets really juicy. Clinton was genuinely intrigued. He was a policy wonk at heart, and he knew the math on Social Security was bad. So after that chat with Lamb, Clinton actually slipped a report on the Chilean reform under Lamb's bedroom door.
I just love the image of the leader of the free world creeping down the hallway in the middle of the night to slide a manila envelope under a guest door. And he wrote a handwritten note on it.
He did. He wrote, "Dick, sorry I missed you. Here's the stuff on Chile. It's so informal, but it shows he was up late reading about this. His administration took it very seriously. His chief of staff, Mac McClarty, even traveled to Chile in 1996 specifically to meet Piñera."
So Piñera sees an opening. He realizes the American president is actually listening to him.
And he decides to shoot his shot. In April 1998, Piñera writes an open letter to President Clinton. But the backstory of drafting this letter is fantastic.
Yeah, the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo.
Right. A very swanky backdrop. Kenyatta is in Tokyo, and he's faxing drafts back and forth all night with a colleague in New York.
The drama of the fax machine. Just the screeching noise, waiting for the curly paper to come out. Definitely dates the story, but it adds to the tension.
High-stakes international faxes. They finally published it in the Wall Street Journal. And the argument was simple. Clinton had already admitted Social Security was in trouble, so Piñera urged him to experiment boldly.
He argued that turning every worker into a shareholder would boost the U.S. economy, and, crucially, he said it would help the poor the most. Which is a counterintuitive point. Usually people think privatization just helps Wall Street or the rich. Why did he think it would help the poor?
Because the wealthy already have stocks. They already have compound interest working for them. The poor only have their labor. By giving them an account, you give them an asset that grows, something they can own and pass down to their children. It democratizes capital.
So did Clinton take the bait?
He did. In his 1999 State of the Union address, Clinton proposed universal savings accounts, USA accounts. Yeah. He wanted to use the federal budget surplus to match worker savings. It was the first time a sitting U.S. president explicitly called for personal retirement accounts invested in the market.
I actually remember that State of the Union, but I had absolutely no idea it was connected to a Chilean economist faxing from Tokyo. So, looking at my pay stub today, I don't see a USA account deduction. I just see Social Security. What happened?
Well, Piñera calls it Clinton's hamartia.
Hamartia.
Yeah.
It's getting literary. That's the Greek tragedy term for a fatal flaw, isn't it?
Exactly. The source material points directly to a Monica Lewinsky scandal. Just as Clinton was gearing up to push this massive economic reform, the scandal broke, and he was hit with impeachment proceedings.
So his political capital just evaporated overnight.
Completely. The sources cite Joe Klein and several Clinton advisors who confirmed this. They said Clinton was completely poised to reform Social Security. He wanted that to be his legacy, solving the baby boomer retirement crisis before it even started.
But to do that, he needed bipartisan support, and he needed his own party to stick with him.
And once he was fighting for his political life, he couldn't risk alienating the left wing of the Democrats, who generally hated the idea of privatization.
He had to circle the wagons. The reform was the casualty. And Piñera writes about traveling back to Chile, knowing the flower would not bloom.
It is a massive what if in American history. If not for that scandal, trillions of dollars of capital might have flowed into private accounts for everyday Americans. We might be living in a completely different economic reality right now.
It's a tragic near miss from Piñera's perspective.
Yeah.
But here is the twist in the sources. While the door slammed shut in Washington, it was opening somewhere very unexpected.
Russia.
And the scene described in the notes here is honestly even more cinematic than the Lincoln bedroom. We jump to April 2004. Piñera is in Moscow.
And he's being driven to Vladimir Putin's Dacha. The source describes this car literally flying at 140 kilometers per hour down the center lane of Kutuzovsky Avenue.
That's the Zell lane, right? Reserved exclusively for the high elite.
Exactly. If you're in that lane, you are the power. It's a late night session again. Pinier is there with a few other free market reformers. And his pitch to Putin is fascinating because he frames it entirely in terms of national power.
Because he knew his audience. Putin isn't interested in Jeffersonian democracy. He's interested in strength.
He did know his audience. Putin's stated goal at the time was to double Russia's GDP. So Pinier tells him to do that, you need a capital market. You need deep pools of money to build factories and infrastructure. And to have a capital market, you need pension reform.
He's connecting the dots between how a grandmother saves for old age and how a superpower builds its industry.
Exactly. The pension funds become the actual fuel for the wider economy. Pinier used a great metaphor during this trip. He told the audience, and the C-SPAN cameras were rolling at the time, that he was like Il Postino.
The postman.
He said, I come today just as a postman, bringing you not a letter, but a message from Chile. And the message was that the reform works.
And unlike the U.S., where the message got totally lost in political scandal, did it land in the former Soviet bloc?
It really did. The source notes that after the fall of the Berlin Wall, almost all former communist countries, Poland, Slovakia, Kazakhstan, Russia, they all moved toward capitalization models.
That is deeply ironic. The former communist countries were quicker to embrace this worker capitalist model than the absolute bastion of capitalism, the United States.
Well, think about where they were starting from. They had zero loyalty to the Bismarck model because their old systems had entirely collapsed. They were starting from scratch and wanted rapid growth. Also, Pinera argues that this model weakens the engine of class struggle.
How so?
If every worker is an owner of capital, the distinction between labor and capital starts to blur. You don't want to overthrow the capitalists if you are a capitalist.
Right. If you own a piece of the factory through your pension fund, you want the factory to succeed. It aligns the incentives. It turns the proletariat into the proprietors, essentially.
Right. So looking at the map today, or at least the map described in our sources, where do we stand? Did the mother of all reforms actually take over the world?
Yeah. Is the revolution complete?
It's a mixed bag, but the trend line is very interesting. According to Klaus Schmidt-Hebel from the OECD, the number of countries with individual savings systems grew from just 17 in 1999 to 51 in 2022.
That's a significant jump. That's not a fringe experiment anymore.
It is not. The world is essentially dividing into two camps. On one side, you have the pay-as-you-go countries, mostly in Western Europe, like France, Germany, and Spain. They are facing what the sources call a perpetual debt crisis. They are constantly raising retirement ages, raising taxes, and facing strikes.
Which we see on the news all the time. Riots in Paris over raising the pension age by just a couple of years.
Exactly. That is the literal sound of the demographic crunch. And on the other side, you have the capitalization countries. Places like Australia, Sweden, Mexico, and Chile. These countries have massive pools of savings. The workers own the actual assets. The government isn't on the hook for every cent of retirement income.
It really highlights the difference between a promise and property. That seems to be the philosophical anchor here. In the old system, you have a promise from politicians that they will tax future people to pay you.
Yeah.
In the new system, you have property. You have the cash.
And promises are fragile. That leads to the final provocation from the source material. The texts argue that the solution to the demographic winter, this global aging crisis, isn't working until you're 80. And it isn't taxing young people at 60%. It's transforming workers into owners.
It's empowering the quote-unquote little guy by giving him the exact same tools that the wealthy have always used.
It really raises a question for everyone listening. When you look at your own retirement planning, are you relying on a political promise? Or do you own the capital?
Because, as we saw with the Clinton story, political winds can shift in an absolute instant. A scandal, an election, a budget crisis. Those promises can be rewritten. But an account with your name on it, that's much harder to touch.
One fax, one scandal, and history completely changes course. It makes you wonder where the U.S. economy would be today if that Hamartia hadn't happened.
It definitely makes you want to go check your own retirement balance. Or wish you had one if you don't. It's a fascinating look at how fragile economic history really is.
Indeed. It's a stark reminder that big ideas matter, but timing matters just as much.
Well, that is all the time we have for this deep dive into the mother of all reforms. We hope it gave you something to think about regarding your own passbook and the global economy. Thanks for listening.